from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Point Reyes National Seashore celebrates its 50th anniversary this year, and from its trademark lighthouse to 150 miles of trails, the seashore attracts over 2 million visitors a year and is home to ranchers, oyster farmers, and abundant wildlife. But the story of how environmentalists and politicians joined forces to save the area from development is less well known. We'll talk about the seashore's storied history and its plans for the future. That's next on Forum. After this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this hour of our forum program. Point Reyes, established as a national seashore on September 13, 1962, by then-President John F. Kennedy, celebrates its 50th anniversary this year as part of the national park system. Sir Francis Drake anchored there back in 1579, and its first inhabitants were the Coast Miwok Indians. In the late 18th century, a Spanish mission was built in San Rafael. The vast stretches of coastline north of the Golden Gate Bridge and 30 miles from San Francisco was saved for parks and farms and preserved as open space free from development. This forum hour, we look back on its history and we look at what lies ahead. Let me tell you who is here with us in studio. Nancy Kelly is a filmmaker of, well, a number of films, but the one we're talking about here is Rebels with a Cause. It's a documentary she made with her husband, Kenji Yamamoto, about Point Reyes National Seashore and Golden Gate National Recreation Area, and it will play Tuesday, October 9th at 4 p.m. at the Rafael Film Center over on 4th Street in San Rafael as part of the Mill Valley Film Festival. And welcome, Nancy Kelly.
Thank you.
Glad to have you with us. We also have with us in studio John Hart, who's an environmental writer and author, wrote An Island in Time, 50 Years of Point Reyes National Seashore. Welcome, John Hart.
Glad to be here.
Glad to have you here. And Ann Meyer is also with us in studio this hour, an environmental activist, environmental activist and past vice chair of the former Golden Gate National Recreation Area, Point Reyes Federal Advisory Commission. She's also current chair of the People for Golden Gate National Recreation Area and the author of New Guardians for the Golden Gate. Welcome.
Thank you, Michael.
Glad to have you all. And let me begin, Nancy Kelly, with you, because we've got some cuts from your film that I want our listeners to hear. And we go back to the history in the film, and it's a history probably not enough people really know about. Congressman Clem Miller of Delaware, federal land then, one of the first of perhaps of two that were actually established as public land. I mean, established as a trust for public land. I mean, this has become national now, and it all started really Point Reyes.
It did. When President Kennedy was elected, he had the idea to make the Cape Cod National Seashore and presented that to his Secretary of the Interior, Stuart Udall.
In his own backyard, of course.
Right, in his very own backyard.
And, right near Hyannisport, yeah.
Right. And what I loved about interviewing Stuart Udall was he was not afraid to say that when he and his people looked at President Kennedy's proposal, they thought it was selfish. And they came back to him and said, let's have one on each coast, Point Reyes National Seashore and Padre Island off the coast of Texas. And
well,
that was the beginning.
There was a good deal of congressional, resistance to the idea even of Point Reyes. I mentioned Congressman Clem Miller, for example. He was pushing for Point Reyes to be designated as a national seashore, and Bill Duddleson was his legislative assistant. That was 1959 to 1962, and he recalled in your movie, we're going to hear this, that Clem Miller ran into initial resistance from local ranchers, then ran into even bigger resistance up on Capitol Hill.
When Clem had his first audience with the chairman of the House Interior Committee, a man named Wayne Aspinall, a curmudgeon, Mr. Aspinall asked Clem, does your local government support this? And Clem had to say, not yet. And the chairman said, we don't like to go against local government. Your bill for the National Seashore has a red light. It will go nowhere until you get local government support.
And these rebels with the cause, as you put them, were really bucking some pretty strong odds initially. They were going up a lot of resistance, formidable resistance.
At that time, the sort of national ideal was development, growth, modernization, and they really were they were outliers at that time.
And we have Huey Johnson as a central player in this. You mentioned already Stuart Udall, and we mentioned Congressman. Congressman we just heard, Clement. Yeah,
Clem.
Talk about Huey Johnson's role in this, could you?
Huey was the director, the West Coast director of the Nature Conservancy, and at the time in the early 60s, and he fought about the southern entrance to the Point Reyes National Seashore, Bolinas Lagoon, which had some wild plans for a marina, dredging the area around Kent Island to create a marina with a heliport and a toll bridge from Stinson to Bolinas. And they fought that because they wanted to keep the southern entrance to the park pristine. And he and Marty Griffin were very much involved with that. He just was there fighting and apparently not very afraid for many, many years.
Fighting against a lot of odds, John Hart, as I said. I mean, the Marin Agricultural Land Trust, that was the nation's first trust of its kind.
It was, although there may have been a tiny precedent somewhere, but essentially Malt was the first. That belongs to a later chapter of the story, of course, after Point Reyes was well and truly in hand. But it's an extension in that today, when you cross one of those low passes between eastern Marin County and the coastal area, you're entering what I call the penumbra of Point Reyes National Seashore, even though it's not all in the seashore. Almost all of that land is protected as a result, direct or indirect, of that first seashore campaign.
In fact, I'm kind of characterizing it as a battle, not only because of what we heard from the cut up in Congress, but there were a lot of ranchers who were in favor of zoning that allowed mass subdivisions. And some of the ranchers, and we'll hear from the movie, like Bill and Ellen Strauss, took the minority view in favor of zoning with less development, and they were ostracized by other ranchers.
When I got married, I came to a farm from New York City. I especially felt very threatened that I would have to move again because of development and urbanization. And so I kind of made up my mind I was not going to be driven out one more time and out of a life that I really loved and an area that I loved and thought was very beautiful.
There again, you have the kind of resistance that we were talking about implicit in her remarks. And I just would like one other cut to be heard here, since we're talking about this early history, which a lot of people don't know about. This is Gary Giacomini, who was on the Marin County Board of Supervisors from 73 to 96. And he remembers going against some aggressive developers who wanted to expand into the area.
Chicago developer Richard Bransing had purchased a West Marin ranch, intending to build 28 deluxe ranchettes. Under A60 zoning, he could have built no more than 9.
We went to dinner one night, and he had a bunch of his henchmen from Chicago with him, 6 or 8 big burly guys. He said to me, "We didn't buy this for the hell of it. You know, we're going to build these 28 ranchettes." And he said to me, "Tell me what you want to be able to do this." So I kept saying, "No, you don't understand. This is the zoning. We're proud of it. That's what you get, and nothing's going to change." I said, I'm not quite listening to you because I think you're trying to bribe me." And he said, "Well, it's not a bribe. It's like a reality. What does it cost us to have you say yes?" And I said, "Well, the answer is no." So I'll never forget, he leaned over to his people and he said, "Get me the guy. This isn't the guy that decides this." And I said, "No, I'm the guy. It's just that the answer is no."
That kind of sums it up in many ways, I think. The Chicago guys. I mean, a lot of people think about Chicago guys being used now, about Rahm Emanuel and President Obama. But these were the developers, and they really wanted to make. In fact, later on in the movie, Gary Giacomini expresses some, "Should I feel regretful? You know, the prices of housing are so great in Marin now because we stopped all this development." What do you think about that, John Hart? I mean, when you look back.
Well, this is almost another program, but I don't think the two things are incompatible. When the county set its sights on preserving the western two-thirds as open space, it really had a trade-off in mind, which was that the corridor along Highway 101 would become more urban and denser and house quite a few more people. That half of the bargain, implied bargain, has not been carried out because there's too much local resistance against adding density. So I'm not sure this was an inevitable result of preserving the parks, but I think Gary's right about the practical effect.
Well, there's still ongoing battles, Amy Meyer. I mean, Congress clarified Drake's Estero as a potential wilderness. I'm not sure what potential wilderness means, but we're waiting kind of – you're waiting, I'm sure, with bated breath from the Secretary of the Interior on a final decision.
Well, when we worked on getting a wilderness at Point Reyes, and this was something the public wanted, and they wanted a big wilderness, and they had, in the end, from Congress, a 33,000-acre wilderness with approximately 8,000 acres declared potential wilderness because certain obstacles had to be removed. And those obstacles, some cases, included things like power lines and roads, but in this instance, it was specifically an oyster farm. And the date was set for it at November 2012, and that's what we're anticipating.
And I don't want to necessarily – we've thrashed out the whole oyster farm controversy here on Forum, and we want to focus on Point Reyes, its history, what's up ahead, and so forth. But can you give us a kind of encapsulated sense of where things have moved along that route or that trajectory?
Well, the people who were there from the start and believe in wilderness and the Wilderness Act and the ability of the Wilderness Act to protect things in their natural or restored state fought very hard for the Esteros. And that's how they came in. And the recommendation was picked up by Congress, and Congress didn't fudge on the recommendation. There's a lot been said since, but we are all anticipating that the right thing for policy and the right thing not to set a precedent that would be damaging to wilderness across the country, to continue a commercial use in what is supposed to be wilderness.
That's where the oyster farm controversy comes in.
That's right.
And John Hart, you want to add to that in terms of...
I have observed that in the oyster controversy, which has haunted my book from its inception, that people with different viewpoints have their favorite facts. And there are certain others that they prefer to ignore. And I have tried to be an equal opportunity displeaser by putting in both sets of facts. So I would quibble with Amy on some of what she said, but that might risk getting us off track. I just say that in my mind, that picture is much muddier than one might like to believe.
And Nancy Kelly, as the filmmaker, pretty muddy from your perspective too?
You know, I have been living in the era of Point Reyes National Seashore from the 1950s to the 1970s. And we just finished the film on Tuesday last week, and I really haven't kept up with the oyster controversy at all.
Well, like I said, I think the important story is the evolution of Point Reyes celebrating its 50th anniversary and the history and the effect it's had. And Amy Meyer, again, this can't be understated. I mean, there's so many trusts now that are trying to preserve land, and to a great extent, this was the seminal, you know, beginning of all that.
Yes, it was. I mean, Point Reyes was, in this area, continuing what had been going on here with the establishment of Muir Woods in 1907, the saving of the San Francisco coastline, parts of it, by the city's mayors in the 1870s, and then on into the 1920s, Mount Tamalpais State Park, and eventually the Golden Gate National Recreation Area built on the idea that, look, the Golden Gate is very special and we've got to save it. And this was a bipartisan government idea. It was simply astonishing that in the Nixon administration, that the Secretary of the Interior, a very intense Democratic congressman from this area, Philip Burton, and Bill Maillard, a liberal Republican, all got together and said, we've got to have the protection of the Golden Gate. The government started with 8,000 acres. Edgar Wayburn, who was a Sierra Club leader, and I formed a group called People for a Golden Gate National Recreation Area. And we worked with everybody to get a park that started, when we got to it, it was 8,000 acres. Today it is 80,000 acres. And it runs from the top of Marin County to the middle of San Mateo County. It is adjacent to Point Reyes for about 10 miles in the Alima Valley, but it essentially it's part of what John was talking about in the protection of the, a major part of the protection of West Marin.
Well, let me congratulate you on, well, all of you for the work you've done in terms of preserving this really inimitable site, which brings millions and has brought millions of visitors. I want to actually...
And may I cut in? It was really Amy Meyer and Ed Wayburn who took what was initially a very modest idea for a federal park and turned it into this wonder that was created.
Well, all kudos to Amy and John on that. And I wanted to actually bring in another voice. Jules Evans is a wildlife biologist at Point Reyes National Seashore. He's the author of The Natural History of the Point Reyes Peninsula. He also writes the Point Reyes Walkabout blog for Bay Nature magazine. And Jules Evans, good to have you with us. Welcome to the program.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
I should mention for listeners that you've lived there 40 years and you're doing a hike of about all of the 150-mile trails for the 50th anniversary. You got three-quarters of that hike done, and this is all to raise funds.
Wow.
That's correct, to raise funds for the Point Reyes National Seashore Association, who does a lot of work in supporting the park, essentially.
And you do some biological monitoring for the Park Service, and I'm wondering there are people out there, as hard as it may be to believe it, don't know what an extraordinary area this is and what it has to see and to experience. You talk about some of the plants and animals. I know you go there every time you see something different, but just what people can see and do see. Michael Ellis has told us this, but let's hear from you.
As you mentioned, there's a large tangle of trails out there, and anyone provides different views of the peninsula. Some of my favorite are along the estuaries, Drake's Estero, the Estero Trail, and Limantour Spit, or the trails around Limantour Estero. And, of course, there are always birds and mammals to see there, especially in the winter when the estuaries fill up with wintering waterfowl. And that's what we're about to see right now in mid-October, large flocks of breeding birds from the north. From the Arctic tundra come down and overwinter in our estuaries, and that's quite a phenomenon.
And the hiking? I mean, give us a sense of what people can just experience from that 150 miles of trails.
Well, as winter approaches, some of the trails become impassable because of the amount of water, assuming we get a good rainfall this year. But there's very simple, easy trails along without much of a grade along the coastline from Palo Morense out to Bass Lakes. And then there's very more strenuous trails climbing up on Inverness Ridge out of Bear Valley up onto Mount Vision and Mount Wittenberg. So there's anything you're looking for is there.
And can you say something about the Bird Observatory?
Point Reyes Bird Observatory was established in Point Reyes out near the Estero Trailhead in the mid-60s because a few avid birders, once this place was opened up to the public, noticed that a lot of rare birds showed up there in the fall, and they became intrigued with that unusual fact and decided to start monitoring the birds on the peninsula. And that has since grown. They moved from the Estero Trail area down to Palo Marin, the southern part of the park, where there's a research station still. This is 45 years later, and 50 years later, actually. And then it's grown to become Point Reyes Bird Observatory Conservation Science, which is really worldwide in perspective, and goes research in Antarctica and to the north in Alaska, all over the Pacific coast.
Jules Evans is with us by phone. He's a wildlife biologist, actually former board member of the Point Reyes National Seashore Association. John Hart, you were going to add something?
I'd love to tell a quick Point Reyes Bird Observatory story, which I didn't know a couple of years ago. There was a stage in the very early years of Point Reyes when the Park Service wanted to develop it heavily for mechanized recreation. And they had a plan to dredge Limantour Estero to put the spoils on what's now the Limantour Spit, surround the area with parking lots, cabanas, and everything that goes with Jones Beach on the Pacific, as Harold Gilliam called it. And they ran out of money for a moment, or there was a delay, and the then superintendent of Point Reyes thought, well, I'll take advantage of this. I'll ask PRBO what they think. PRBO was brand new, and they brought forward the data that made it clear this was a terrible idea, and the Park Service dropped it.
Amy Meyer, half century later. It's hard to believe, isn't it?
It is very much. And I guess I want to say something about Nancy's movie because I had a chance to see it the other night. And just the things that Jules Evans was describing, and just as this conversation has been going along, to know how gorgeous this place is, how absolutely thrillingly gorgeous, how special it is. I mean, the Park Service had been looking at it since 1935, and then gradually when it started to build up, and then Clem Miller grabbed it and ran with it, and backed by Claire Engel in the Senate, and with the support of John Kennedy for the reasons Nancy gave. And there, I mean, what we have been able to save out there is, you know, it's a treasure.
We even were able to film a spotted owl on Inverness Ridge.
How well I remember those debates. That takes me back.
Incidentally, if I may interrupt, Point Reyes supports one of the highest densities of spotted owls on the Pacific coast. So that's one of an added benefit of the wilderness area out there.
Yeah, stay with us, Jules Evans, because I want to give out the phone number. And I know there are many listeners who want to not only bring out perhaps some of the experiences you've had in Point Reyes, but what you've seen and what you particularly value and cherish about it. We'd like to hear from you. I mean, it has been 50 years now that it was officially declared, that as Point Reyes National Seashore was officially declared a national treasure. And I'd like to hear from some of you who have some thoughts. I mean, it's ongoing 2 million visitors a year, home to ranchers, oyster farmers, and abundant wildlife. And we're trying to get the story here of how environmentalists and politicians actually join forces to save the area from development. You may have some thoughts about that, too, and I want to have us hear something again from Nancy Meyer's film that I had alluded to before, a clip of Gary Giacomini looking back and reflecting about how expensive the properties are, and did he do the right thing? You might want to weigh in on that. Oyster battles over oyster farm, you may want to weigh in on that as well. But we're looking more at the history this hour and the treasure of Point Reyes. And let us hear from you. Our toll-free number is available. You can join us now at 866-733-6786. Again, toll-free number, 866-733-6786. I know there are many of you who have experienced the beauty of Point Reyes National Seashore and may want to indeed tell us about that or what you've seen, what you've experienced. You can also email us. Our email address is forum@kqed.org, or you can post any of your comments on our website or bring up any questions you have about this history on our website as well, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can go to our Facebook page. Many ways to communicate with us. You can tweet us also. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Remind you that with us in studio is Amy Meyer, environmental activist and past vice chair of the former Golden Gate National Recreation Area Point Reyes Federal Advisory Commission. She's also current chair of People for Golden Gate Recreation Area and the author of New Guardians for the Golden Gate. We also have Nancy Kelly with us, filmmaker, Rebels with a Cause, a documentary she made with her husband, Kenji Yamamoto, about Point Reyes National Seashore and Golden Gate National Recreation Area. It will be playing Tuesday, the 9th of October, 4 p.m. at the Raphael Film Center on 4th Street in San Rafael as part of the Mill Valley Film Festival. John Hart is also in studio with us, environmental writer and author of An Island in Time, 50 Years of Point Reyes National Seashore, and with us by phone, Jules Evans, wildlife biology for Point Reyes National Seashore Association, former board member, and author of The Natural History of the Point Reyes Peninsula. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about Point Reyes, celebrating its 50th anniversary this year, from its trademark lighthouse to 150 miles of trails, a seashore attracting over 2 million visitors a year, and a place that really established the possibility of trusts and preserving. As I said, there's, you know, that ongoing, well, controversy, I suppose, about whether or not the development of the land would have been better, and particularly in terms of keeping housing costs in places in Marin County down from the exponentially high costs that they're at. And this is Gary Giacomini, who we heard earlier, who was on the Marin County Board of Supervisors from 1973 to 1996. And in the film, by Nancy Kelly and Kenji Yamamoto, he noted that there were some downsides to preserving the land. Let's hear
it. One of the results is the price of housing has skyrocketed. A lot of our kids and grandkids can't afford to live here. People have asked me that on a moral basis. Would you do it again if you knew that that would be one of the effects? And it made me think a lot, but I concluded that I would still do that, because the preservation of these spaces in Marin has made it be possible for Marin to be the lungs of the Bay Area, if you will. Just like there has to be places where people work and live, there has to be places where people can recreate in all senses of that word.
Well, there may be some who have gone out and looked at the sticker prices who may disagree with the wisdom of that, and you may want to weigh in here. But Amy Meyer?
Yeah, John made the point very well, that when two-thirds of Marin County was essentially dedicated to open space, there was the implied promise that the eastern third of the county would get increased density, and that would help with those prices. I mean, let's face it, the real estate in the Bay Area is incredibly expensive because it's a heavenly place to live.
Yeah, it's everywhere. It's not just Marin County. I wanted to ask you, though, Amy, because it's important for people also to know that there are these ongoing programs. There's a lot of stuff going on with the 50-year anniversary, but there are ongoing programs that have been really quite successful. Education for children, going out in the trails. Remember Miss Terwilliger? And I mean, tell us about what's happening.
Well, it is throughout all of these parks. It includes the Clem Miller Environmental Center and the children who come there at Point Reyes, the Slide Ranch, which happens to be in the GGNRA, the ship experiences at the San Francisco Maritime National Historical Park, which was born at the same time as part of the GGNRA and then separated. All of these places have programs, and the teachers bring their kids out. And, of course, there's the Headlands Institute in the Marin Headlands.
And the Urban Trailblazers, who camp out at San Francisco's one campground, the Rob Hill Campground.
That's right, yeah. So that's in the Presidio. And it's just the idea that the young people here get these experiences, but we also look to bring people out here of other groups and organizations from the educational groups to seniors. I mean, the idea that people in this area have a feeling for the land and for the environment. And when you talk about climate change, just to take something we all hear about here, it's no wonder we believe in climate change. We know it. We see it. We've been on the ground.
We live it.
We live it.
Yeah.
Try telling that to someone from somebody other parts of the country.
And Amy Meyer, again, is current chair of People for the Golden Gate National Recreation Area and author of New Guardians for the Golden Gate. Here's Jonathan from Pleasanton, who says, the most amazing thing I have noticed is the aquifer that must run below the coastal range. This unusual natural water source keeps the numerous lakes full, fresh water flowing, waterfalls full all year round. This water supplies all the flora with the sustenance it needs to thrive and thus provides an enormously diverse wildlife habitat. It's so rare to see this year-round abundant water supply. Well, you've written a good deal about this, John Hart.
Point Reyes is a wet place, and it's not so much precipitation as fog. It really is. It's almost a part of the ocean in its climate, and it's nourished biologically and hydrologically by this upwelling that takes place off the Northern California coast here that produces tremendously rich ocean waters. It's really a hot spot of biodiversity and marine life on the planet, and produces also this fog belt that keeps Point Reyes moist
most of the time. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's it is a very unusual environment.
Here's Gene, who says, I want to caution listeners that a portion of the protected area is at risk. There's a plan afoot to build an artificial turf soccer complex at the western edge of Golden Gate Park, which will include as much sports lighting as Candlestick Park. These lights will impact the wildlife and spoil the dark sky overhead. The GGNRA has sent letters to San Francisco's Recreation and Parks Department expressing concern about the lights and asking for modification of this plan. Additionally, there's a risk that rubber tire crumb and artificial turf will harm the nearby Pacific Ocean and San Francisco Bay. This takes a little out of Point Reyes, but puts us right in the Golden Gate National Recreation Area, and you can make of that what you like. Let me go to our callers, and let's begin with a caller from up in Marshall. Lynette, hi, you're on.
Hi, Hi, it's Lynette in Marshall. I was fortunate to be great friends with Boyd Stewart, who died a few years ago at 101, and or nearly 101, and Amy Myers was a friend of the Stewarts. They still operate the ranch down in Olema. And Boyd was very much involved. He testified before Congress in getting the park going. He was very much involved in getting the ranchers on board, who were very stubborn at the time about doing that. But he convinced them that the only way they would be able to continue ranching was to be part of this seashore. So I think one of the things that we really, so he always said it was built on the back of the ranchers, this seashore. And I think the thing that a lot of us environmentalists really don't celebrate enough is the ranchers who have really kept this place going.
Yeah, Amy Meyer.
Yes, I thank Lynette for that comment, because there was, an agreement made, and it's fundamental to Point Reyes, that there is a pastoral zone and that it is expected that ranching will continue in that pastoral zone. It's marked, it's clear, and it's not as accessible in the usual ways as other parts of the seashore. But it is part of the total agricultural fabric that's developed with malt in West Marin. And the saving of the ranches has been a continuity of the saving of the green. It comes out beautifully in Nancy Kelly's movie.
And Lynette, we thank you for your call. And we go to Inverness Park and welcome Sylvia as our next caller. Good morning.
Hi. Thank you so much for this show and everybody who's helped create this beautiful place we live in out here. I live in out here. A group of us West Marin locals have created a new environmental group, ActionTamalisBay.org. And this is to respond to the waterfowl hunting that goes on in the newly created addition to the Point Reyes National Seashore, which is the 550-acre Giacomini Wetlands. And every year for 100 days, this is going to start in 2 weeks, the Fish and Game operates a waterfowl hunting area at the exact entrance to the Giacomini Wetlands, and birds are shot as they try to get to this newly created wetlands. And our group, ActionTamalisBay.org, is trying to see if there's support to get this hunting in that area to stop. And I wanted to hear
Sylvia, thank you for bringing this up. I'd like to go to you, Jules Evans, on that and get some thought from you.
Well, yes, the Giacomini Wetland was created in 2008 after 10 years of planning, essentially to attract waterfowl and increase the diversity of water birds in Tamales Bay. And it's done splendidly well in the short time it's been, the tidal action has been restored to the wetlands. We actually do the monitoring of the winter waterfowl there, and it's increased, doubled every year. Last year, our high count was about 12,000 waterfowl.
Now, how many are being shot, though, or hunted?
I don't know the numbers there, but it has created something of an ecological trap in which the birds are attracted into the wetland and right at the entryway where the jurisdiction changes from National Park Service to Fish and Game. The hunters have figured that out, and so there's a bottleneck there where the waterfowl come in and they're shot. I don't know how many are shot, but it's certainly an ongoing process every morning.
Let me thank Sylvia for calling that to our attention, and let me get some more of your calls on here. We'll go to San Jose and welcome Chuck. Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning. Hey, in the late 60s, early 70s, I was a scoutmaster, and a troop planned its schedule so every October, rain or shine, we used to go out to Wildcat Beach. And then on Sunday morning, as we left the Bear Valley parking lot, we'd go down to the oyster farm and pick up a couple of quarts for our wives and families.
Good memories, huh?
Oh, great. And in 73, when we had the oil embargo and couldn't get gasoline, we actually conducted a 50-miler in that 170 miles of trail because we didn't have enough gasoline to get the troop up to the High Sierras.
You should do a 50-miler for the 50th anniversary.
There you go.
I'm 80 years old now. My knees won't take a pack down or uphill.
Well, John, it's good to hear from you, and we thank you for that call. And there's Max, who writes, in my 8 years living in the Bay Area, I've had plenty of occasions to enjoy the preserved natural resources of Marin County. They are beautiful and valuable. That said, the history of zoning, regional planning, and development activism in Marin County is as much about classism and racism as it is about environmentalism. Opposition to higher density development within that the cities of Marin is about nothing more than keeping poor people out, and the opposition over the years to improve public transit in Marin renders much of the benefit of the nature preservation irrelevant. What good is it to preserve natural wonders that are in close proximity to cities if weak public transportation guarantees that poor people will have a very difficult time appreciating these natural wonders? Some thoughts from any of you.
Is that
I would add
program?
Something to that, that water, is a limiting water is a limiting factor in Marin County. One of the reasons, perhaps it's some of those reasons the caller mentioned, but also density is dependent on availability of water to provide for all the people there.
Well, Amy Meyer?
Yeah, transit requires density. I mean, effective transit requires density, and certainly, we worked very hard, as a matter of fact, when we worked on Golden Gate, to get a transit section in the bill. There was a study. We had transit going out to West Marin. We've been able to keep it in the headlands because it's fed by a big population in San Francisco. But certainly, that's something to consider in Marin County.
What do you think about that?
I'm
sorry, Nancy.
It is possible to get to Point Reyes National Seashore by public transportation. You take a bus from San Francisco to San Rafael to the transit center there, and then take the West Marin stage out to Bear Valley.
But do you have an opinion about the assertion that there's an attempt to keep poor people out, that this is classism and racism? I mean, those are heavy words to bandy about, but what are your thoughts?
Well, I have encountered those attitudes rarely, but I actually think it is more a visceral feeling that the way things our leafy suburbs, as the Brits would call them, are the way to be, and that any change to that image and that lifestyle is a threat. I think it's not purely a sociological phenomenon, not at all.
All right, we'll bring in more of your calls, and we go to Point Reyes. Lila, join us. Hi.
Yes, hi. I've lived in West Marin for about 30 years. I know Jules. Hi, Jules.
Hi,
Lila. Hi. I would like to say, apropos of the last comment you read about the economics of the people that live out here or the trying to keep people out of beautiful areas, the towns in West Marin are really the people of the town should be saluted for keeping the gateway as wonderful as it is.
Amen.
They work hard, and they don't have a lot of money, and they work on projects like affordable housing, commons projects. They want to educate the 2.5 million people that come into Point Reyes and Inverness throughout the year. And they start up groups like the Environmental Action Committee. These are not people that have money. These are people that love the area and want to stay in it and want to see it kept beautiful.
All right. We thank you, Lila, for that call. And, in fact, we've been getting some testimony here about, of course, the beauty and the wonders of Point Reyes. I want to read a couple emails, especially since we heard Amy Meyer talk about how much educational value there is in learning experience for young people. James writes, "My first true outdoor educational experience happened in 1976 when I was in sixth grade growing up in Novato. My whole sixth grade class spent 5 days based out of the Clem Miller Education Center. We hiked to see different ecosystems each day. This experience initiated a lifelong love for the natural world and for studying natural history and science. I now teach for PRNSA, that's the Point Reyes National Seashore Association, as a painting and drawing instructor in the park and enjoy sharing knowledge, mine and the history of this wonderful place with my students." Another listener, Patsy, writes, "I want to express my immense gratitude to all who worked to save this beautiful place. I have been living here full-time since my retirement in 1995. I find I take for granted the beauty of the area and the efforts made to save it. Thanks to you all, I vow to help keep up the good work." And Tom says, "Point Reyes, nearly a complete gem, but could your guests explain the continued presence of such a large acreage still used for livestock? Weren't the ranches purchased when the park was established and allowed to operate only under grandfather leases that were to terminate? Have they not exceeded those lease arrangements? So much of the park appears relatively ecologically intact. The pastoral lands are an ecological nightmare with soil, vegetation, and water degradation, and the ranch buildings out of Tobacco Road. The broadest spreading of the manure from the dairy operations, which harbor the bacterium that causes Jones disease, is an issue of which many park visitors are probably unaware. Better cows than condos, sure, but the park remains sullied with cows." Let's hear from our wildlife biologist, Jules Evans.
Well, I think Amy addressed that and John fairly well earlier. It's part of the history of the park. There certainly are some management issues that could be handled maybe more aggressively by the park, but it's a delicate balance between maintaining the dairies and maintaining the wild areas. I think there's been a huge improvement over the last 20 years in that regard. I think since 1990 or so, about half as many calves now graze on the lands. It's less overgrazed than it used to be. I think there's an ongoing attempt to resolve those issues. And also, I believe, and John might correct me if I'm wrong, I believe some of those leases have opportunity to be renegotiated after certain periods of time that were decided at the time the ranches were established, be it 25 years or 99 years.
Yeah, Amy Meyer, you're going to say.
Yeah. Well, first of all, these rights of use and occupancy were up to 50 years, and then later on they were up to, when later land came in, it was up to 25 years. But, and at that point, there is the right of renewal by the ranchers. That was built into the system. And it's the idea that this was part of the bargain, as we said before, of Point Reyes. And it's what I particularly want to remember is that the Advisory Commission for the park spent a lot of time with a former superintendent, John Sansing, on raising the standards. This was carried forward by the next superintendent, Don Neubacher, and is continued by Cecily Muldoon, the present superintendent, to raise the standards for the grazing of animals so that the land isn't overgrazed, isn't rutted, isn't eroded. And when we started on this back in the 1980s at the Advisory Commission, things were not in good shape. Today, one should recognize, by the way, that the ranchers have one very big difference between them and the ranching outside the park. It costs them about half as much per animal unit per month inside the park as it does if they would have their cows outside.
So things have gotten better, but there's still ongoing maintenance problems.
There are.
Yeah.
I have a dream. Can I cut in for...
John Hart has a dream. Yes.
I don't say it as well as that was first said, but for a future of Point Reyes in which agriculture remains, but in which it is possible to tilt the coastal prairie, which is a very unique and wonderful grassland type, back somewhat toward its native original condition. It's dominated now by exotic species, although not so much as some grasslands. And the idea of deliberately managing back toward nature while maintaining the agricultural use is very attractive to me.
May I add something there,
Michael? Jill Sevens.
Also, the last superintendent, Don Neubacher, did increase the research arm of the park substantially. So now there's rangeland manager, there are exotic plants. There's a whole team of people actually dealing with exotic plants. And I think we're on the path towards John's dream, but it's a slow process and a difficult one.
May I add something?
Please, Nancy Meyer. And Nancy Kelly, excuse me.
In that first clip from our film that you played where they talked about John Aspen or Congressman Aspinall, a curmudgeon, and how he told Clem Miller, your Point Reyes National Seashore Project has a red light until you're able to show local support. And really, it was the ranching community's local support that that he was demanding Clem find. And when the ranchers finally came on board,
that's the turnaround.
Yeah, that was the turnaround.
Website comment. Thank you, Amy Myers, and everyone for protecting Point Reyes National Seashore. Let's protect this natural beauty for everyone so that future generations may always enjoy the many, many breeding and migrating birds and other species that rely on this habitat for their home. And Jane Ann says, when are speakers going to mention the families who have worked hard for generations to keep the land on the point as it is, the Nunez, Mendozas, Keos, Spalettas, and others? Well, we just did. We mentioned them. We'll do a couple more calls here. We go to Andrea. Good morning.
Yes, hello. What a timely program. My children and I are in the process of driving up to Point Reyes this morning. I have a 14-year-old and a 4-year-old. And I just spent the entire day yesterday there, hiking about 15 miles, and am due to complete my full completion of the 150 miles of all the trails by the end of the year. And I just had a couple quick stories I wanted to note. How much Point Reyes has really been an integral part of the fabric of my family life. With my children, we have maps of Point Reyes all over the house. My children have been camping there since they were young. I have a four-year-old who likes to change her name often, and one of her last names was Limontour. My 14-year-old, when he was young, he wanted to move to Sky Camp number 10. He continuously aspired for that to be his permanent home. And they both love the place. I do have to take them to Bovine Bakery now to get them up there prior to hiking the trails. But the 14-year-old, even though he doesn't want to admit it, does know how to distinguish between a Bishop Pine and Douglas Fir. Thank you so much for all the work everyone's done here.
Thank you for your call. And good to hear from you. And say hello to Limontour for us. Let me bring on Dave as our next caller. Dave, hi. You're on.
Hi. Yeah, I've lived in San Francisco for 40 years and have used Point Reyes as a point of solace and solitude and peace. But recently I had open heart surgery, and 6 months later I was able to walk down Bear Valley Trail on an incredibly beautiful day in mid-June. And there's just nothing like it for healing after that kind of an event.
Thank you for that. And I want to get Michael on from Forest Knolls, who's bringing us a caveat, I guess. Michael, hi.
Hi, this is Michael Sewell. I did the book with the late Galen Rowell, Bay Area Wild, and we had a heck of a time sorting out the images for the whole Bay Area, because we ended up with the book looking really heavily weighted toward Point Reyes, and it's just such a jewel of the Bay Area. It was a real difficult issue for us to not favor that area when we were trying to really cover the entire Bay Area.
Well, Michael, forgive me. Didn't you want to say something about developers still trying to get in? Or?
Well, that's one of my points I'd like to make, and that David Brower wrote the introduction to that book we did, and I'm still pretty close with his son, and we keep up with what's going on. And every election cycle, the supervisors race in West Marin always has developer money coming in from as far away as L.A., but also some of the original developers that built homes out there that had to be torn down when the seashore was created. Some of those developers are still around and still contributing to supervisors races. So I think it's important that people not just kick back and think it's all been done, because there's always pressure on the surrounding areas, and it's just a fantastic place. I spent a lot of time out there. I'm out there still to this day, every week or so, kayaking a lot, and it's just, I've traveled a lot, the Arctic and the Amazon, and I'm always happy to come back to this area. It's just fantastic, and I want to say hi to Jules Evans, too. I haven't talked to him in several years.
Right. But, good of you to call, and we thank you for that call. And there's a listener from, actually a professor from Sonoma State, who writes, there's a tendency to presume that establishing the Point Reyes National Seashore was needed to stop suburban development in the early 1960s. But when one looks at the timeline, most of the subdivision attempts came in after the park was first proposed by NPS in 1959. In January 1960, soon after Point Reyes National Seashore was first proposed, there were a total of 62 owners on the peninsula, and 99% of the land was held by only 25 ranch families. But by early 1962, there were 396 owners within the seashore's proposed boundary. So the park became the solution for a problem that was caused, at least in part, by the proposal itself.
Hello, Laura.
You know who that is.
I believe I know who that is.
But what do you say to
An
that?
Esteemed colleague. Yeah.
Your thoughts?
Well,
fairly accurate. I mean, she's given us the numbers.
If the caller
here
is the person I think it is, I'm looking forward to her book, which will explore this matter. I traced this timeline too, and I established to my own satisfaction, at least, that the big development at Limontour that was about to go down was conceived before the park idea was public. So I tend to disagree, but I can always be convinced by new information.
Well, we've got a listener also, CJ, who says, Point Reyes is a marvel. Thanks to many of you. Just want to let you know, when I go to Netflix and search for Rebels with a Cause, I get a film on the SDS Radical 60s group. So, says, I'm not able to make it to San Rafael for your screening due to a work commitment. How would you suggest I can get a hold of the film? And Nancy Kelly, can you help?
Well, we just the film's world premiere was on Saturday, just 2 days ago. So we're still working on things, but it will eventually be aired on public television. Our partner in making the film was KRCB, the public television station in Sonoma County. There will be DVDs, and you can. Then there will be many, many screenings around the country of this film. There's a screening at the United Nations Association Film Festival on Monday, October 22nd, at the AOL Patch Theater in Palo Alto.
And again, those who can see it tomorrow, it's at 4 p.m. at the Rafael Film Center, which is over at 1118 4th Street in San Rafael. That's part of the Mill Valley Film Festival. And Dale from Palo Alto says, thanks to Amy Myers and her passion for this place. I spent a couple of weeks camping in Point Reyes this past summer. It's a beautiful area, a truly national treasure. I was, however, truly dismayed at the amount of damage caused by horses running trails and turning some beaches into huge horse sandboxes and rendering some camping areas as uncampable. Also, I'm not sure why swimming is allowed in some of the lakes, an activity which disturbs waterfall. Wondering how well we are truly preserving this wonderful place. And Jules Evans, can we get a response?
Well, the horse lobby, if you want to call it that, the horse people were very involved in establishing the park, so they seemed to get a special dispensation. Maybe John or Amy could talk to the history of that better than I. But I've been walking all the trails, and I will say there is some damage by horses. The park works hard to remedy those places where the trails destroyed, and it is an ongoing issue, as are mountain bikes and hikers versus bikers and horses.
Is the oyster farm, and I just want to read one final email about the oyster farm before we conclude here. This is from Melanie. It says, the oyster farm's lease is up, period. Contracts are contracts. I have no idea what individuals in the future will do. If a precedent is set by Secretary Salazar at the urging of Senator Feinstein to privatize public land and allow her contributor business associates to profit off the oyster company he purchased, knowing full well that this post-expiration scheming would have to take place and betting millions on it and her. Nothing muddy about it. Point Reyes is a jewel, and its preservation is more important than ever. Well, we'll leave it at that and leave the controversy on the table here. Let me thank all of you, Amy Meyer, Jules Evans, John Hart, Nancy Kelly, you, our listeners. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.